Welcome back to the Charlotte Angel Connection, the Charlotte area podcast linking entrepreneurs, investors, and the broader Charlotte community. As you know, our goal here is to interview the individuals who are building, shaping, and influencing entrepreneurship in the Charlotte region so you can be invested in Charlotte's growth. Today, we are very fortunate to have Betsy Hooser Ittleby, co-founder of Tech Talent South, join us. Betsy has led Tech Talent South to the point where they just finished their first successful investment from Kramer Mountain Growth Partners. She's brought on board some very successful people to help her grow the business. But over the last several years, she's gone from, I believe, not really being able to code, to attending a coding school, opening Tech Talent South, and growing it to 11 cities across the Southeast. She's done it in an industry who's facing consolidation and struggles recently, in boot camps. She's done it in a small city not known for coding or successful startups, and she's done it as a female in a male-dominated industry. Needless to say, she's created success with significant hurdles. As such, I'm extraordinarily happy, pleased, and anxious to have Betsy join us on the show today. So, Betsy, thanks so much for taking some time out to talk with us.
Thank you, William. I'm excited to be here. And that intro, I actually gave myself a little pat on the back. I'd like to hear that again sometime.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. So, what you've done is obviously quite impressive, and is talked about down here in Charlotte. I know you're up in the Davidson area, and it's talked about down here in Charlotte on a regular basis. So, without question, you should pat yourself on the back.
Thank you.
Before, so just to jump right in, we've got a two-part podcast going on here as we have over the course of the last couple of weeks. So we'll go 50 minutes, but we'll take a break at the 25 to 30 minute spot. But before you started Tech Talent South, you started, I guess, Little Idea, which is now part of Inventus. So you're what is essentially would be called a serial entrepreneur. What makes you an entrepreneur? How did that start?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you a little bit about my story. And I actually didn't start Little Idea. I hopped in when they were a couple years in.
Okay.
They were a group of primarily engineers, so very technical folks, doing physical product prototyping, sourcing manufacturers, you kind of name it, they did it. But they didn't really come with a business angle.
Yeah.
So I jumped in and brought that to the table. And then, of course, like you mentioned, we merged with Inventus a year in. And what was so exciting to me, well, one, was to see the change in Little Idea in such a condensed amount of time. I mean, this was about a year before we merged with Inventus from when I onboarded. So it was a very rapid pace change, and it was very exciting to me. And as I was there, I recognized this real need for something similar, but in a digital space. So you imagine we had a bunch of people coming to our office, bringing in, you know, physical product ideas. I want the new widget X. But towards the end of my experience at Little Idea, we really saw a lot of change in our customers, people coming in saying, hey, I want to build a mobile app. And I thought, well, this is really cool. We don't have the means to do that.
Yeah.
But I'm missing out on a huge market segment. And so it was at that point I started to teach myself to code. I wasn't exactly sure what I wanted to do with it. So when we merged with Inventus, I had the opportunity to onboard with Lewis and his amazing team. I knew he would put me in business development right away, and I was really excited about that. But I also knew if I'm going to jump and take a leap and build something from the ground up, this is probably my last opportunity to start. I didn't have kids at that time. My husband was stable. So I jumped.
So I'm curious, though. So you jumped, but I mean, you were, correct me if I'm wrong, but you were a journalism major at Chapel Hill. How'd you jump into business at coming out of journalism, right?
Yeah, you know, ironically enough, my CTO is also a journalism major from Chapel Hill. So it's interesting that we both come from that background. I will say I was a journalism major, but we had focuses. So my focus was actually advertising, which is a bit more aligned with what I've been doing. But the real story is I was working in Chicago in PR, and I started to make my own products on the side. Little side hustle products. I was an early adopter on Etsy. I'd make little like dog products and crafts and sell them. And I really enjoyed it. And through that experience, I actually learned how to build out my own website. I taught myself Facebook ads. I taught myself some SEO. And I realized I really understand the whole product cycle. I sourced manufacturers for some of these products and put them into stores. And it became a bit more of a hobby, a bit less of a hobby and more of a pursuance. So when I moved to Charlotte, I was really full on supporting myself with my own products. I did that for about 5 years, and it was very exciting, although I didn't have an exit strategy, yeah. Nor did I know the things I needed to know going in. So I found myself, you know, 5 years in making a teacher's salary, which I now know is incredible. Yeah. But at that point, I wanted more.
Let's circle back for a second then to what I said earlier and kind of focus in on Charlotte and Tech Talent South. So you're a female founder, you live in Charlotte, two big negatives in the world of startups. What support or what existed for you to be able to go to in the early days to say, I'm doing this and I'm struggling, or I'm doing this and it's creating a lot of success, how would I build on it? Where did you find that as a female founder in Charlotte, North Carolina?
Yeah, that's a great question. I had the luxury of, you know, operating in this sphere before with Little Idea. So I had some existing contacts. I'd been going to Skookum Tech Talks since their inception. I had some solid mentors in folks like Steve McAdam, CEO of InPro, and Dave Jones from Peak 10, who were always very helpful. It did take me a bit longer than I don't think I recognized the need for a female mentor until a couple of years into TTS. That has been instrumental in kind of re-energizing myself. So Tana Green, that runs Blue Bloodhound out of Davidson, actually has been mentoring me for a while, and she's really been so helpful in understanding the differences that I face as a female. And there are an abundance of them. I mean, everything from I have two kids, which creates an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, no, I bet. Keep on the Tech Talent South for a few more minutes. You've got the mentor, but how did you get started? So let's go all the way back to, so you leave Little Idea. How do you, you know, you had the idea, you knew that people were coming to you for, you know, to develop an app. You started to teach yourself to code. And this is a neat story, and I've heard it before. Can you share it with our listeners of kind of what you did and how you got it up off the ground?
Of course. So after a Little Idea and Inventus merged, and I decided I really wanted to build something from the ground up, I knew I needed to throw myself into learning to code. I wasn't really sure what I was going to do with that. I wasn't sure if I would build out a similar model to Little Idea where I was basically a project manager for folks trying to build out their ideas. Long story short, I ended up being a very early adopter to code schools. I almost was in the very first class at Iron Yard and know those guys very well because they were building out their product when I was looking. But ended up going to a school in Chicago called Starter League, which was co-owned by the folks at 37 Signals. And for those that don't know, they wrote Basecamp. They also, the man who actually wrote the language Ruby on Rails works there. So great people to learn from. So once I was there, you know, really felt the energy, and it was a bunch of amazing people from all over the world. I mean, William, you can't really recreate this experience. It wasn't, you know, wasn't one typical demographic. It was people that had been doctors before, attorneys before, were building out their second or third company, and folks that wanted to be developers all in one place and all incredibly motivated to learn. While I was there, I thought, well, this is amazing. Man, oh, go ahead, William.
Oh, no, I was just laughing.
I was going to say, so the only thing I thought could have been a little bit better is if it had happened down south and I hadn't needed to leave my husband for 3 months and sleep on my buddy's couch at 31 years old. So fast forward 6 months and we launched first in Atlanta, which was very strategic on our part, and then expanded throughout the Southeast. And as you said, now we have 11 locations in 6 states. And as we were ramping up, one of the things that I think we did that really set us up for success, we actually started by teaching kids code, paid programming. Now anyone that knows about TTS knows that that is all altruistic, and I believe it should be. But we taught paid kids coding programs across the Southeast. And what that did for us was essentially open a lot of doors and give us enough cash to bootstrap the adult programs. Okay. So we were able to facilitate the relationships with the right people in the right markets with, you know, friendly 8-year-old faces, which is an easy ask.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So talk a little bit about, so you said that Atlanta was a very strategic place to open up. Why choose Atlanta? What was the significance of it?
Yeah, so it was the biggest market that we were looking at early on, and we knew we needed to get there fast. And a big reason, I knew that companies like General Assembly, which is, you know, the Mac Daddy of code schools, they were looking at Atlanta as a market. They didn't have eyes on a market like Charlotte yet. And so we thought, well, what can we do better than General Assembly? We can be first on the ground and have multiple classes graduated before they ever come. And that's exactly what happened.
Okay. So you start in Atlanta, you're on the ground. I guess you doing some kids schools as well. What was your second location?
Yeah, this is always funny. So our second location was actually Asheville, which I love that market, but that was for a variety of reasons. One, we wanted to test our remote bandwidth. Obviously, I knew I was going to open in Charlotte. It's where I have the strongest network. It's my husband at some point would want me home. Yeah. So that was a no-brainer, but we needed to know, hey, if we're going to expand outside of Atlanta and Charlotte, can we manage a remote market? My co-founder is from Atlanta, so we knew Atlanta and Charlotte would be in good hands. So we opened Asheville just to test, and it was, of course, driving distance for both of us. So from Asheville, once we knew we were able to handle that challenge, we launched Charlotte and Raleigh almost immediately.
So how fast did you say 6 months after you launched Asheville? Is that right?
No, it was even quicker than that. So we had our first adult program in October of 2013 in Atlanta. We launched Asheville in February and Charlotte and Raleigh, I believe, in March.
Okay. So I'm going to go back, and I don't have anything against it. You're a journalism major from Chapel Hill. How did you launch 4 cities in 8 months?
Well, so one of the things that you should keep in perspective, William, is I found out I was pregnant month 2 of TTS adult program. And what that did for Richard and I is give us a really firm deadline on when we needed to have X amount of campuses open and running. Yeah. So it was both a blessing and obviously a little bit of an excitement point for the company.
But don't you get tired during the first trimester? How did you do all this while you were tired?
You know, I think if you have so much going on, you don't notice that bit as much.
Okay.
You know, I was so motivated to do it and so excited by the difference we were making in our students' lives that it was really an easy decision for me. You know, it's an interesting world to live in where I can really see the impact that we have on our students. You know, I see their lives being changed, their families' lives being changed. I see them grow within the company. It's an exciting place. So doing more and more of that, it's motivating, not exhausting.
So as you've grown, and are the people that teach the coding classes, are they contractors or are they employees?
A hybrid of the two.
Okay.
So a lot of our instructors are practitioners. So they may come in and teach an iOS class, you know, an evening a week. And a lot of those are kind of just on Rolodex. They might teach a class, then take a class off. So they may teach one or two a year. It's kind of an extra thing for them. Many of them use it as a recruiting tool. So there's some selfish motives there, which works really well. And then we have some folks on staff that are full-time salaried. And they do a lot of things outside of the classroom. They may teach a session and then work on curriculum for a session. And then, you know, we have a one-on-one tutoring model. So many of those are first in line to help with our remote tutoring as well.
Okay. So outside of teachers, what was your first hire and what was the significance of it?
You know, William, this is always up for debate within TTS because I still have both of my first two hires. One I hired, so the first that I hired part-time, and then the other that I hired salary, and they battle it out as to who is actually the first employee.
Fair enough. Just don't let them listen to this part of the interview.
they would be totally fine with it. So Laura was our first hire. She jumped in to run social media and branding elements. She kind of brought the cool vibe that I think TTS has. That was not me. That is all Laura. And then she went on to launch our New Orleans campus. And she's basically held every role within the company on that side since then. So she's bounced around a lot and been really incremental. And we've been very lucky to have her. Yeah. She's even gotten to go to the White House with us, which was very exciting. Then Zach, who many people in Charlotte know very well, was my first salaried employee. And that was one of the only things I did on maternity leave with my first child. And it was for the sole fact I could not argue that he was a contractor because he was doing a bunch of stuff really quickly. So we were really forced down that salary road. And he's been with us ever since. I mean, he's held all kinds of roles. He started as a TA, moved into an instructor role, moved into managing instructors, then director of product and curriculum. And with this most recent investment, you know, he's CTO of the company.
You nailed it with your first two hires. We'll call them joint hires.
Yep.
We'll go down an alternate path. What would the business have looked like had you not had the successful hires that you did? What if you would have struggled?
You know, we certainly have lost some amazing team members over the years. I mean, it's an exciting and overwhelming thing to work for a growing startup.
Yeah.
But I think if I've done one thing incredibly right, it is recruiting. I've never been passive about recruiting. I find amazing people and find a fit for them rather than post a job and hope the right person applies. One of the things that has been so great with TTS that I didn't anticipate, we run 8-week incredibly challenging programs, right? So you have to imagine the folks sitting in those programs, the ones attending all the extracurriculars and hustling and not throwing their computers out the window when they hit a bug.
Yeah.
We tend to try to poach those people too. So we have a really great recruitment process within our own walls.
Fair enough, yeah.
I hired a lot of TTS grads. They obviously know the experience. I built the company on hustle and heart of some amazing people in Charlotte and some folks that have gone on to do really incredible things for the tech community outside of TTS, which is really exciting to see. So we're very supportive of them. Now we've kind of gotten to a point where we have also been hiring some folks with a lot more experience, and it's been very helpful.
Yeah, I noticed that in your recent press release, and we'll go down this kind of employee path for a little while. But so you've got two pretty successful people that are either on board or will be on board, and that's Suzanne, is it Spies, and Daryl Jones, is that right?
Yeah, they're both on board. Suzanne has been on board for, I think, about 4 months now. So we kind of hit her until the announcement, but she's been here.
Okay.
And then Daryl just joined a few weeks before the announcement. Very excited to have them. Happy to speak a little bit about their background and why they made so much sense for TTS.
Yeah. I mean, they're super, you read their resume and it's a resume that their resumes that everybody would want on their team. So A, how did you find them? And B, how did you recruit them to TTS?
Yeah, so Suzanne and I have been introduced several times over the last few years. One time I ghosted on her, which she keeps reminding me. However, she has also said it's acceptable because I had my second child the next day.
Fair enough.
So I knew that I needed someone, a COO, a real compliment to myself. I like being out in the community. I love talking to people. I know the stuff I don't love, which is, you know, modeling out the next few cities and doing the back office stuff. Suzanne is an expert in that area.
Yeah.
So we had been introduced several times over. I met with her multiple times over the past, 8 months maybe. And then eventually, as this deal started to solidify, it made a lot of sense. And so she also met with the investment team. And, you know, we decided, I just want to go ahead and do this even before that happens. And I think she's excited about the growth potential at TTS. And one of the things she's mentioned, exciting, you know, to walk into a company that's profitable already.
Yeah. That helps.
Right. So it's a unique experience for most people in the startup world. But, you know, it's all about the growth here. We're really excited about the corporate vision. And, of course, Daryl being an incredible asset. So, you know, Suzanne came from a strong startup background, being at diapers.com and, of course, being there through their acquisition with Amazon and then at Jibe. She just, you know, she really understands how to roll up your sleeves and help out in a startup. She's not above anything, which is incredible. And she's a wonderful manager. Daryl has built out, you know, it's business development team after business development team, and is an enablement expert. He spent 8 years in Asia as director of partnerships for SaaS, and then moved on to have a similar role at Atlassian. So as you said, you really can't come up with a better resume to lead our, you know, corporate transition and build out that team for TTS.
How do you feel about as equity as compensation for startups? Is it something that's highly important? Is it dependent on the company? And I know different founders have different opinions on it, but what's your view on it?
Yeah, I wish I had known more about my options going in, and candidly, I didn't. Richard and I, as founders, were fairly protective on that front. As we've grown, I really want to see, you know, the right people motivated in the right ways and going towards the same goal. I think if you're a founder and you haven't been down this road before, this is a place to find mentorship. A few people have really helped me provide me with options of, hey, these are some different ways we've structured it. The Baggianos and specifically in Charlotte have really helped me look at different ways to position, you know, equity.
Yep.
And I think that's something that, you know, young founders may not really understand. And of course, there are a lot of ways that you can, you know, you don't want to give it all away before you know if the person's going to perform, because once you're partners, you're partners.
So you hit on a question I love to ask. So go back with me all the way to, you know, concept of Tech Talent South. You're about to get up off the ground. You've got the concept. You file your paperwork with the state. If you could go back and tell yourself something during the first 6 months, hey, do this instead of that.
Yeah.
What have you learned as an entrepreneur that you wish you could go back and quickly, you know, teach your old self?
Yeah, there are so many things.
I bet.
A couple things that I really wish I had known. One, I wish we had we had an operating agreement, but I wish we had really thought through more of those things and consulted, you know, folks that had been there before early on. I think that would have been helpful later. And everyone tells you that, but you're so excited about the business that it's hard to take a step back and focus on those things. I also personally wish that I had I had made the leap to hire some experienced folks earlier. Candidly, that's a bit harder when you're a bootstrapped company, because you really don't have that, you know, safety net funding. But it has been life-changing for me personally, and I think I would never have gotten to a point of burnout had I done that, and it would have been exciting. And I did hit a point where it was a challenge. So those are two of the main things. The other thing I would say that's a bit sillier, but really true. I wish I had known how to deal with state regulations better. So even filings, et cetera, there's a lot of sitting on the phone. There's a lot of finding the right person, and you just have to pick up the phone and call and sit till you find the person that's going to help you. And it can be very overwhelming and take a lot of time. And at first it seems intimidating, but you just have to find the right person. And it really does require a lot of effort on your part to, you know, pick up the phone, stay on the phone, call back, get names, get phone numbers. And when you launch in 6 states in 4 years, there's a lot of that.
As you were sitting there talking about that, I was like, I didn't even think about it. But being in six different states and teaching, I would assume probably comes with a whole heck of a lot of headaches.
It's interesting. Yeah. For sure. I wouldn't have launched in so many states so quickly had I understood that part of the business. That said, that's sometimes a blessing, right? Like if I had known that those would be challenges, I might not have made those decisions and we may not be, you know, where we are today. Yeah. So not knowing is sometimes, you know, actually a blessing in itself.
Did you know it could be this successful this quickly?
Not initially, but I saw the land grab and the companies taking on funding. I knew what was happening, you know, with Iron Yard and Dev Boot Camp and, you know, all the excitement in the market, which obviously told me there's really something here. And what was so interesting with TTS, we went at it in a very different way. You know, we didn't go after San Fran and DC and New York, we really thought we can make a greater impact on tier two markets like Charlotte, where there's a great scene here and it's still building and we can really be a part of that direction. There are a lot of folks that want to get into tech. So we went at it at a different perspective than I think a lot of our competitors. And we were able to monetize markets, you know, like Asheville, which was wildly different. And, you know, one of the things I would say that was maybe one of my greatest assets that I didn't recognize at first was the fact that, you know, I didn't know how to raise money. So I didn't do that. We were making money. We were growing. I didn't want to stop. And, you know, that put us in a position to really outperform some of our competitors because we were able to last.
Absolutely. So what you said about being in Charlotte and kind of that very early kind of emerging thing, I want to keep on that track, but I think that's going to be part two, and we're starting to kind of come up on that 25-ish minute break. So if you don't mind, let's take a quick break. We'll start up in a few minutes on next week's show. And next week's show, I want to talk about the tier two market in general, but specifically Charlotte and how much potential there is here and how much potential there is in other states as well. So let's pause. Thank you again so much for, you know, the first session. I thought it was fantastic. I love hearing your story. The greatest thing about interviewing entrepreneurs is you can feel the energy. So I love the energy, but, you know, thanks again. And we'll start back up here in a few minutes.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
William Bissett is an investment advisor representative with Seacrest Blakey & Associates, a registered investment advisor. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Seacrest Blakey & Associates. The topics discussed and opinions given are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Seacrest Blakey & Associates also does not offer legal or tax advice. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their financial needs with the appropriate professional regarding your individual circumstance. Investments herein described may be speculative and may involve a substantial risk of loss. Interest may be offered only to persons who qualify as accredited investors under the Securities Act and a qualified purchaser as defined in Section 2A, 51A under the Company Act or an eligible employee of the management company. There generally is no public market for the interest. Prospective investors should particularly note that many factors affect performance, including changes in market conditions and interest rates, and other economic, political, or financial developments. Past performance is not and should not be construed as indicative of future results.